Okay, welcome everybody. My name is Troy Swanson. I am the Library Department Chair. And today we're having an event that's part of our One Book, One College program, which is on the book All We Can Save, which is a book focused on sustainability, climate change, and how we build communities that are sustainable into the future. And as part of that conversation, we wanted to do something that was a little unique and also really close to home and very practical all at the same time. And for that, we're happy to welcome Catherine Bryla, who's the president of SAG Moraine, and she will tell us what that is and how the group works. But talking about native plants and the impact they have, and it's something that we can do in our own backyards to help take steps toward a more sustainable direction for how we live. So, Catherine, thank you so much for your time and for being here. And with that, I will turn it over to you.
Thank you so much, Troy, for having me. And I want to thank everybody for joining and for listening. And I want to very much thank Moraine Valley College. Moraine Valley is such a wonderful institution of education in our community. And personally, some of my favorite learning experiences over the years were from classes that I took at Moraine Valley. And I specifically remember taking a number of earth science classes. Way back when, I'm not going to tell you when, I'm not going to date myself, but and just loving all of the going out in nature and studying the evolution of prairie and forest. And it gave me such a respect of what's going on out there in nature during when we're just living our busy lives away from nature. And then I went off and I got my degree and had a business in a completely different field, but always in me was this passion for the environment and a yearning to someday get back to working in that realm. And that has finally happened with SAG Moraine Native Plant Community. And I am just so thrilled. And again, I can trace this all back to classes at Moraine Valley College. So thank you, Moraine Valley. So SAG Moraine Native Plant Community, we are a 501c3 nonprofit all volunteer organization in the we cover the southwest and near west suburbs of Chicago. Our motto is restoring our environment one plant at a time. And what we're trying to do is encourage landowners of all sorts, whether that be residential, business, agricultural, to incorporate native plants on their property. What we're not asking people to do is remove all of their lawn and plant a prairie. We feel that the more people, that a lot of people doing a little bit is going to have more impact than a few people doing a lot. So I know in my neighborhood, if I were to put a prairie in my front yard, all of my neighbors would be complaining. I would not be inspiring any of them to get on board. So 100% of our plants don't have to be native, but it'd be nice to shoot for to start 30%, maybe go up to 50%. Don't get rid of our lawn, make it smaller. We need lawn for for children and for pets and just to make this all, you know, our community has to gradually get used to this whole concept of native plants, and we can't throw prairies at them, and we can't throw 10-foot tall plants in our front yard. And so we're really promoting more of a moderate message and but hoping that it will really catch on, because if this doesn't catch on with landowners across the board, we're not going to be able to turn around the damage that has been done to our environment, to our ecosystems. So our motto is restoring our environment one plant at a time, and we want everyone to know that every plant makes a difference. A little bit more about who we are and what we believe. Our mission is to advocate for the use of native plants in residential, commercial, and public landscapes. And we believe that native plants are the foundation of our food chain and must become more widely utilized to improve the ecosystems that sustain all life. We strive to provide a fun, friendly, and welcoming environment for all who share our commitment to restoring native plants to our community. And what we do, Well, we do more than that. What we do is we host in-person and online learning opportunities. We host webinars. You can always find out the latest activity that's going on with SAGMarine on the homepage of our website, sagmarine.org. We also actively promote things on Facebook, Instagram. We also go out into the community. We do a lot of community outreach. We go out and give presentations like this to park districts, to libraries, and so on to try to get the word out to the public. We try to provide assistance in selecting native plants and obtaining native plants. Not only we're going to be having our first plant sale, which I'll talk more about later. We're going to be having that in the spring of 2022. But not all native plants are made for home use. And the key is here that we need to start thinking of our homes, the places where we live, the places where we work, as part of the conservation of part of a con as part of a conservation effort to improve our ecosystems. We always tend to, and I always did too, I thought nature was out there, that public lands and government prairies and natural lands, they had it covered. Our beautiful forest preserve district, they had it covered. Then when I start doing research and you realize that 95% of Illinois is privately owned. So if private landowners don't also get on board, although it's wonderful what these other areas are doing, but it's not going to be enough to make a difference. So now we have to start scaling it back. There are some plants that are very conducive to a forest. There are some plants that are very conducive to a prairie. Not all of those are conducive to somebody's front yard or backyard on a quarter of an acre lot. So what we try to do is guide people on what plants will work well and be beautiful and inspiring in a residential area, in an urban suburban area, and then also provide assistance in obtaining those plants. We plan to do garden projects, sponsorship and oversight. We're going to be giving away four gardens in the spring, so watch for information on that in our website. And as COVID hopefully lifts more and more, we plan to offer more in-person nature appreciation experiences for adults and children alike. We got to get the word out to all generations, landowners now and landowners in the future. So why do we feel that this is so important? What's the scoop on native plants? Native plants are the foundation of a healthy ecosystem. And so what is an ecosystem? You move my little pictures here so I can read this. An ecosystem is a geographic area where plants, animals, organisms, and weather interconnect. So what is a native plant? One of the things we do at SAGMarine is try to advocate for native plants because somehow over the years they've become synonymous with weeds. And this could not be further from the truth. A native plant is one that is a part of the balance of nature that has been developed over hundreds or thousands of years in a particular area. A non-native plant, by contrast, is one that has been introduced with the help of humans, intentionally or accidentally, to a new place or habitat where it was not previously found. So most of these plants are plants that were imported here from Asia or Europe as part of it was the thing. The grass is always greener. Let's bring these beautiful plants over here. Let's our landscape industry has pushed all of these non-native plants on us as that's what your landscape is supposed to look like. You're supposed to have burning bushes. You're supposed to have calorie pears. You're supposed to have boxwoods. All of these plants that have no ecosystem value and in many cases are invasive and problematic for our natural lands, which I'll talk about in a little bit. And finally, what is a weed? A weed is a plant, native or non-native, that is not valued in the place where it is growing. Interestingly, most common weeds are non-native plants. They come here from other countries. They don't have any natural pests, natural predators that with which they co-evolve with, and they can just completely take over. And our deer don't like them, and our rabbits don't like to eat them, so they have a free reign. So basically, it's our choice. We have this quote, which I love, on the homepage of our website. We cannot, in fairness, rail against those who destroy the rainforest or threaten the spotted owl when we have made our own yards uninhabitable, by Sarah Stein. And I just love that because we always think that the problem is for somebody else to handle, or for government to handle, or for organizations to handle. But anytime we own land, we have the ability to make a difference right there. And to me, that's a very empowering message that we don't have to just say, we've messed up the environment, we've messed up the ecosystem. Climate change needs to continue, our food chain needs to be at risk. We all have the ability to make this happen, and it's people that are going to make this happen. It's not government that's going to make it happen. It's basically our choice, more native plants or less native plants. With more native plants, we'll have a healthy ecosystem. We'll have abundant beneficial insects and pollinators. We'll have abundant birds, a balanced food chain, abundant production of edible fruits and vegetables, improved air quality and reduced carbon, more purified water and less soil erosion, and a balanced ecosystem means less occurrence of disease. Or we can continue on the road of less native plants, and we'll have, and mostly lawn and parking lots, and we'll have an unhealthy ecosystem, fewer and fewer beneficial insects and pollinators, birds, our food chain becoming more and more precarious, deficient production of edible fruits and vegetables, poor air quality, increased carbon, poor water quality, soil erosion, unbalanced ecosystem, and yes, more occurrence of disease. Why is this? The first thing I want to talk about is our pollinators. A lot of people have probably read or heard on the news about the problems with our native pollinators, how our pollinators are declining at a pretty disheartening pace. And pollinators are absolutely essential to our very existence. More than 150 food crops in the US depend on pollination. Pollination is key to the production of oxygen. Pollinated plants are our friends who are going to sequester carbon and help control our climate. Pollinated plants help to purify water and prevent erosion. Pollinated plants return moisture to the atmosphere. We need pollinated plants, and we're not going to have pollinated plants unless we have pollinators. Our pollinators include butterflies, moths, flies, beetles, and bees, but bees are absolutely number one, the most efficient pollinator that we have. And another thing that we try to do at Sagamarine is PR work for bees. A lot of people are afraid of bees. A lot of people don't want bees in their yard. A lot of people try to plant anything. They go to the store and say, I want plants that don't attract bees. I want to talk a little bit about the different types of bees. First of all, the majority of bee stings are actually from yellow jackets. They're a wasp. So most stings are coming from wasps, not bees. And although wasps will go on flowers, their main goal is not flowers. They're meat eaters, so they're going after other insects. So they're the ones that are the guilty ones of, I would venture to say, 90% of bee stings. We have two types of bees in our environment. We have European honeybees and our native bees. European honeybees are non-native. They came from Europe. They require unnatural industrialized bee farming. They go around with these big boxes, these big beehives, and they travel from farm to farm to pollinate the crops. This is necessary because we've completely eliminated our native naturally found bees from these agricultural environments because of our industrialized farming techniques. This is susceptible to colony collapse disorder. We've had a lot of problems with hives dying out. This is a very precarious solution to something as important as our food supply. And honeybees do compete with our native bees for food. They have contributed to the die out of many of our native bees, and they are more aggressive. They do live in large colonies. It's large colony bees that are going to be aggressive. Our native bees, by contrast, are almost all of the species are solitary. The only exception is bumblebees, and bumblebees live in small colonies, very small in comparison to the honeybees, and they're not near as aggressive as honeybees. You pretty much have to be sticking your hand in a nest of a honeybee for it to go after you. Native bees are peaceful and they rarely sting. If they do sting you, they don't. It's more like a mosquito bite than it is a bee sting. And the thing is, our native bees need native plants. They can feed off of the nectar and pollen of all sorts of flowering plants. And for years, I was a gardener, and I was trying to garden for bees and butterflies and hummingbirds. And my whole thought was they're feeding. And then I realized, wait, I was missing out on their reproduction. They can feed off of many types of flowers, even ones that we've imported from other countries, but they cannot reproduce with them. Their larvae need the pollen and the nectar from native plants to grow. So without native plants, we can feed our native bees, but they cannot reproduce. And that's one of the main reasons why our native bees are experiencing such a decline. And interestingly, native bees are at least three times more effective at pollination. In fact, I'm going to show you a photo of one of our very peaceful spring native bees, a mason bee, who's extremely important at pollination of our a lot of our spring crops, our fruit trees. And they are mason bee can do the pollination of 200 European honeybees. That's how effective they are. And they don't even have a stinger. So no, as you can see, this guy on my finger, no need to be afraid of them. And here's many of the crops that we can thank our bees for pollinating. So I'm not saying that European honeybees are bad. We need them in our agricultural areas, because we have done so much damage to the native bee population already that we cannot just remove the honeybees. We'd have no food. So we need them. We need to do this, but we don't need them in residential areas. People think they're helping the bee population by having their beehives out in their boxes. And I've seen them in natural areas and even in the forest preserve district and so on, and I understand they're trying to help, but what we need to do is get our native bees back and try to help them out. And we're not helping them, we're actually hurting them by raising these the honeybees in these areas where there's no crops that we need. This is the area that they feel, you know, scientists feel that cities and suburbs are critical areas to bring back our bees and our other pollinators and our birds that are declining. So really try thinking of our native bees and not the honeybees so much. They've become the poster child. Another poster child is the monarch butterfly. A lot of you have probably heard of the problems with the declining monarch butterfly. Its numbers are down about 96% as of last year, in the past few decades. And that is primarily caused by habitat loss and lack of the plant milkweed that they need to reproduce. Again, they can feed off of many types of flowers, but if there is no milkweed presence for them to lay their eggs on and for their caterpillars to feed on, they cannot reproduce. And as we've taken milkweed out of our environment, which used to be very prevalent on roadsides and in prairies and natural lands, as we've taken, as more and more of that space has become parking lots and industrial and suburban sprawl, these guys don't have what they need to reproduce. And I just wanted to put a plug in for a great program that is initiative that's going on. It's called the Illinois Monarch Project. Please look it up. And this is a number of organizations that are getting involved to try to get milkweed into our environment to try to prevent the extinction, which will happen in the not too distant future if we don't turn this around, of this amazing species with its amazing migration that it takes every year. This is an iconic species, and it would be just such a travesty to lose this. And there's a lot of very big organizations, the University of Illinois, Brookfield Zoo, the Field Museum, Sag Moraine, but we're like the littlest fish on the rung, who are all trying to work together to help our monarchs out and to get more milkweed into our environment. So why are, and Illinois is a hugely important state because their migratory path goes right through the center of Illinois. So what Illinois does is probably going to determine the future of this creature. Why is this butterfly so important? Well, you never know when you take a certain creature out of the whole system what cascading effects are going to happen. But even though the monarch butterfly has become the poster child of this problem, this is going on throughout our insect world. This is going on throughout all of our butterflies and all of our moths, all of our caterpillars, many of our beneficial insects, whether you're thinking of beetles and lightning bugs and ladybugs, this is going on all over. They cannot reproduce because they don't have the native plants that they need in order to reproduce. These are some photos. Again, I'll date myself, but these are some photos, and this is what it looked like more when I was a kid. You wouldn't see three lightning bugs in your yard. You'd see masses of lightning bugs in your yard. You'd see caterpillars actually crawling across the sidewalk. Who remembers that? You would see, this is what streetlights looked like, and or your outside lights on your house looked like this with so many moths. You'd see our regular native ladybugs all over the place taking care of aphids and other non-beneficial insects. You'd see a lot of these little roly-poly bugs in your soil that were breaking down organic matter and making our soil full of nutrients. You don't see views like this anymore. I remember when I was a child and a teenager, if you went driving at night in open areas, your windshield was splattered with bugs. Now, virtually not at all. I mean, you can just see when you look through the years and when you have experienced 30 years ago and you're experiencing now, it's proof that there is a problem. I didn't just base my conviction of this to books or writings or readings. I've seen it over the years through my life and through also just working in my own garden. So what's causing this, what they consider the insect apocalypse? Lawn chemical use, pesticide use, habitat loss, yards that look like this, and introduced invasive species such as this calorie pear up here. You know, this was all the rave for many years to plant these. They are beautiful. Pests don't bother them. In fact, there's not one species of moth or caterpillar or any other beneficial insect that can use this plant to reproduce. So that's why you'll never see holes in the leaves on this. It's completely worthless in regard to ecosystem value. And it's become invasive, and it's taking over a lot of our open lands. It's become a real problem in the Forest Preserve District of Cook County. This is one of the main invasive species that they are constantly trying to keep under control in the forest preserve. So if you live anywhere near the forest preserve, please try to not have these and some of the other invasive species on your property, because they're getting over into there, and it's just an overwhelming project to try to keep these under control. I know this sounds awfully depressing, but if all insects on Earth disappeared, within 50 years, all life on Earth would end. If all human beings disappeared from the Earth, within 50 years, all forms of life would flourish. I have a theory that one of the reasons why we think of bugs as icky and almost like they're non-creatures that don't really deserve to live as much as other creatures is because they're so small, we don't see their faces. So we don't connect with them. So I like to show some pictures here of their faces and their eyes to see that these are really, they're really creatures in their own right. And they have so much vital service to our ecosystem, so that we need to start thinking of them as not something to kill with bug zappers or chemicals, but something that is an essential part of our ecosystem that we need to protect. This one is a little bit easier to sell to people, the importance of birds. Birds are cute, they're cheerful, they're sweet, they make us feel better, and they're bigger, so we can relate to them a little bit more. And birds are absolutely key to our ecosystem. They keep destructive agricultural insects in check. They are responsible for the pollination of many flowering plants. They prevent their disease through waste removal. A lot of types of birds are eating a lot of the carrion and dead animals, and they're kind of our garbage disposals of the land. They're spreading seeds and restoring our ecosystems. Birds are the planters of our natural lands. Without them, our natural lands would be a mess. They would not be restored. And by the work that they do, they're helping to store carbon and keep our climate stable by sustaining our natural lands. So we need birds, birds need insects, and insects need native plants. One of the key insects that birds need is caterpillars. Caterpillars are the number one food that birds feed their young. They're packed with nutrients and they're very easy for their young to digest. They're soft bodied. Caterpillars again come from butterflies and moths. As our butterfly and moth populations are dying out, so are our bird populations, because they can't as successfully reproduce. If anybody is interested in learning more about what we can do in our backyards to help our ecosystem, I would highly recommend reading a book by Doug Tallamy. Two that I would recommend are Nature's Best Hope and Bringing Nature Home. Doug Tallamy is an entomologist from the University of Delaware. We also will be having him again for a webinar on February 17th, so keep an eye on our website for a place to sign up for that. But according to Doug Tallamy, it takes 6,000 to 9,000 caterpillars to raise one clutch of young chickadees. If we're taking away most of the native plants that caterpillars feed on, how are our birds going to be able to get these caterpillars to raise their young? So it's just natural that as we see less and less native plants, we're seeing less and less insects, and we're seeing less and less birds. It's estimated that we've lost about a third of our bird population in the last few decades. Here's a food chain that shows that native plants truly are at the base of our food chain. Our birds and our insects rely on native plants. Our birds rely on insects. Our herbivores rely on lands planted by birds. And our herbivores rely on native plants to eat. It's always going to be the favorite. Our crops rely on insects for pollination, and they rely on birds for pollination. Humans and livestock rely on those crops. Our carnivores rely on birds for food and the herbivores for food, and it all comes back down to native plants. This does sound depressing, but this is a message of hope, because what can we do? There's a lot we can do. We have such power as landowners, regardless of what kind of land you own. And what we can do is we can plant native. Native plants are beautiful. They're essential to our ecosystem. They're easy to care for. Once established, they require less water because their roots go deeper. They're designed for our climate and they're adapted to our soil. So here I'm showing a number of photos of some of our wonderful native plants, again, that are good for urban and suburban smaller landscapes. That's what I'm focusing on here, trying to help landowners get native plants on their property. And as you notice, the photos of these plants, they're absolutely lovely. And these are plants that aren't going to get 10 feet tall, and they're not going to take over your whole yard, and they're not going to become a wild, uncontrollable prairie. Wild, uncontrollable prairies are beautiful in a wild, uncontrollable prairie. These are plants that are going to work great in your backyard, in your garden, or in front of your business. I will be offering in the spring, Sagamarine is going to offer a presentation just on the plants that work well in home landscapes. A little bit more information about all of them, what sites they like, how much sun they like, what are their growth habits, what types of species do they attract, what types of butterflies or moths use them as host plants, and how beneficial are they to our pollinators and birds. So we're going to be offering a program that just really delves in depth to some of these great native plants for home and suburban landscapes. I just wanted to give you some photos of them. They are definitely not weeds. Another thing we can do is to include some keystone plant species in our landscapes. Every ecosystem has certain species that are critical to the survival of the other species in the system. Without them, the ecosystem may not survive. So in our area, keystone plants, again, that have the most ecosystem value are here. And number one by far is oak. Oak trees are the king of our ecosystem. They are the host plant to at least 500 species of butterfly and moth, followed by plum, cherry, willow, birch. And by the way, willow does not mean those big weeping willows. They are imported. I believe those are from Asia. But some of the taller willow shrubs like pussy willow and prairie willow, birch, red maple, goldenrod, sunflower, strawberry, false indigo, and Joe Pot. Now, I don't want people that live in a condo or a townhome or an apartment to think they're off the hook, because I don't care if somebody has 10 acres or a 10-foot patio or balcony, we can all make a difference. Remember, our motto is restoring our environment one plant at a time. If you have room for one plant, you have room to help. And there are many native plants that do well in containers. To get the most impact out of your containers and to have beautiful containers, it's good to have three types of plants in there. Thrillers, which are the taller focal points, spillers, which cascade over the side, and fillers, which fill in the middle. So some native thrillers that work very well in containers are blue hyssop, oxeye sunflower, anise scented goldenrod, zigzag goldenrod, and obedient plant. Spillers, purple poppy mallow, wild strawberry, and fillers, purple coneflower, butterfly weed, lance leaf coreopsis, foxglove, wild petunia, sky blue aster, and prairie drop seed, which is a native grassy, beautiful plant. And I do also want to mention a few non-native annuals that work, that really do a lot of service to our pollinators that we're trying to help restore. Because sometimes there's little periods of time between the blooming of our native plants. And although they cannot reproduce on these plants, these four types of plants can really give them a lot of blooms that they need in between the blooming of our native plants, and therefore help them and help us get the populations back up to where they should be. And those are Lantana, Cosmos, Zinnia, and Alyssum. When I see monarchs in my yard, they are 80% of the time on my Zinnia and about 20% of the time on my Lantana. But they could not reproduce if I didn't have native milkweed in the yard. Another thing we can do is to create a pollinator-friendly habitat. We can do that by choosing native plants that provide pollen and nectar, include some butterfly and moth host plants, and minimize hybrid or native cultivars. A native cultivar would be better than a non-native plant, but it has been found, scientists have found, that our true native species, our straight native species, have much more benefit to the ecosystem and to our pollinators and birds than cultivars do. You can always tell a cultivar when you go into a garden center if it says the name of the plant, but then it has another name in quotations, that means it's a cultivar. So what I always like to do, and one of the problems we have with native plants is there's not enough of them, and we have plant sales in the spring and they usually sell out and you have to place your order very early because there's not, most growers are wholesale only. So the average person, there's no place where they can just walk in any day they want and buy native plants. And our garden centers do not carry many. And if they do have them, they're usually cultivars. So what I always like to do, just to be annoying, is go into garden centers and ask for certain native plants. And I know they're gonna say no, they don't have them, but at least then I can say, oh, it's a lovely plant and great for our ecosystem. You should maybe consider, you know, carrying it. And I'm just hoping that if enough of us do that, they'll start carrying more of these because they're gonna go where the money is. So it's not that they refuse to carry native plants. If they're gonna make money off of them, they'll start carrying them. We should plant in clusters rather than single specimens. It makes it easier for our pollinators to find our plants. Again, we're not advocating for removing our lawn altogether. There would be, you know, an uproar if we said that. But we're hoping that people will reduce the size of their lawn as it really does have no benefit to our ecosystem, and find a place to get a few native plants in. Planting, if you're, and again, our message is if you're going to plant a tree in your parkway, make it a native tree. If you're going to plant a shrub in the back corner of your yard, make it a native shrub. And if you're going to plant flowers or consider planting a 6x6 or an 8x8 pollinator garden of native plants in your yard. Choose a variety of spring, summer, and fall blooming plants to provide pollinator food throughout the seasons. Avoid the use of herbicides and pesticides at all costs whenever you can. It's very sad to me when I see all the white flags all over lawns, and I know that, you know, that is poisoning and killing a lot of our beneficial insects and pollinators, but we have this desire to have perfect green lawns without a dandelion, and I'll just leave it at that. Avoid using landscape fabric, rock, or thick mulch. When possible, use native plant ground covers to prevent weeds. This was something that really surprised me. I didn't realize that a lot of our pollinators, they'll lay their egg on plants, and then when the egg hatches and it becomes a larva, it'll drop to the ground, burrow in the soil, and finish its formation into butterfly or moth below ground. If we have rock or thick mulch or landscape fabric, it can't fully form, and it will die on the surface. Let fallen leaves remain in your garden beds until spring. You have to remove what's on your lawn or rake it over into your garden beds. It'll break down, it'll fertilize your soil, and many pollinators overwinter in leaf litter. And we talk about lightning bugs. That's the number one reason why they're disappearing at such a rate, and we have so many, so much fewer of them, is they are a species that overwinters in their larval stage in leaf litter. So as we blow all of our leaves away in the spring, we're blowing away all of our lightning bugs. Wait until Mother's Day, after Mother's Day, for your first lawn mow to help bring spring, to help spring foraging pollinators and emerging insects that are coming from the soil. Also some of those, you know, leaving a few dandelions around, I'm just saying that can really help some of our very early emerging pollinators that are in need of a meal. I was very happy to see, I think it was the Village of Westmont, they sent out in their village newsletter this spring asking people to please wait till after Mother's Day to mow their lawn. Wait until spring to do a yard cleanup. Many pollinators overwinter in old stems. If you need to cut them back, leave, you know, only cut them back to maybe say 18 inches. But when you can, please leave them there. Our solitary bees like to overwinter in those stems. So if we're removing all the stems, we're removing a lot of native bee larvae. And help reduce light pollution that harms our birds and insects. Billions of birds are killed every year. Millions of birds, I'm sorry, are killed every year by crashes with windows. And much of that is caused by too much light pollution that is disorienting them. And, you know, they use the moon and they use the stars for a lot of their navigation during migration. So light pollution is a big problem when it comes to our birds and our moths and other night flying insects. So please help reduce light pollution. Use motion sensor yellow or soft white LED lights outdoors that shine downward. And I keep losing my cursor here. And the other thing you can do is help out Sagmarine. Help us restore our environment one plant at a time. You can do this by becoming a member, making a donation, and please, oh, please consider volunteering. Again, we're going to be having our first plant sale in the spring. We've started planning that now. We'll be having it. It will be putting it on our website for people to order native plants probably by January, and the orders will have to be in by March for us to get it into the wholesale nurseries and then have distribution days in May. So we would love volunteers for our plant sale. That would be amazing. Okay, any questions from you, Troy?
Let's see, are there any questions people wanna put in the chat? This has been great. Let me just start by saying thank you, Catherine. This is so much good information. And I think it really comes across the impact that we can have by supporting and planting native plants. I know that in my yard at home, we have a long yard, and in the back, we put all of our native plants, a lot of cone flowers and things like that, because our hoses won't reach to try to water, and they don't need the water because they survive so well in our ecosystem. So it makes life easier, but it also is nice because they live on without any care, really.
Exactly. They do become much easier to care for. I mean, any garden, any plant, the first year or two until it develops its root system needs to be watered. But then, yeah, they're ready to go, most of them. And I thank you for having me. What we try to do at Sagmarine too is give a message of hope, because we really can help the problem. And call on people to do that, because we just, this is a problem that's not going away. And it's something that's fun and cheerful to try to help out. We're talking about beautiful flowers, and we're talking about birds. And when we have so much ugliness in our world now, the garden is a place of refuge. And we also, you know, we'd like to give responsibility, but know that it is fun, but these things, I think a lot of times people look at birds and they look at insects and they think, well, that's them and it's a shame, but when we learn how critical these things are, and that if our birds keep disappearing and our insects keep disappearing and our pollinators keep disappearing, that does affect humans. We are not separate. Everything affects each other. And as our ecosystem collapses, it will come around to us. So, and we can't ignore it anymore.
Okay, I'm not seeing any questions. So maybe this is a good starting point. And I know you'll send me information about the plant sale and other
I
events
sure will.
In Sagamarine. I'm happy to check that out. I see, oh, Susan, did you have a question? I see potential, I've unmuted.
Yeah, I just wanted to tell Catherine, thanks, I know her. I got her introduced to Moraine to do the talk.
Oh, Susan, hello there.
Yes, I'm part of Sagamarine as well. And it really has great insights, ideas, information, and the speakers are really phenomenal. So I really feel they do a great job for anybody who's interested and wants to participate in the organization. But also, I think more importantly, from a realistic standpoint, like everybody that has interest, a lot of times want to go to the extreme and have everybody be so excited as they are. But the reality is everybody isn't either yet to be there or may never be there, but just the little bit they can do that can help our ecosystem is a big deal. So, you know, like Catherine brought out, even if you could just put one plant out there, you're helping, because all these things are migrating across our properties. It's not just that we can rely on the government or something else to fix it. If we don't all chip in a little bit, it just kind of keeps eating away at what we have for our, you know, whole eco environment. So yeah, thanks Catherine for your insights.
And I did not pay her to say that.
No, she does not pay me. But yeah, I found her organization here during COVID when she first started up, and yeah, I really enjoyed like the guest speakers. Like she mentioned Doug Tallamy's coming back. I immediately was putting that on my calendar because his talk is really, really incredible in terms of the impact to everything and his understanding about it and just some of the research he has access to. Like he had spoken about putting up 5,000 GoPro cameras on bird nests or bird houses to see what they're feeding the birds. And sure enough, they're feeding them caterpillars, which are incredibly necessary. And if they don't have the environment to have a caterpillar and butterfly grow, we can't have the birds be able to survive to feed their young. So yeah, it was very insightful and interesting in terms of all his knowledge and how he describes it. So yeah.
He's amazing. And he's amazing. And he has a movement I want to like share with everyone. It's called Homegrown National Park. And he's trying to get 20,000 acres of native plants throughout our country. And he's asking people to plant native and go on Homegrown National Park and get on the map. So his goal is 20,000 acres. So look it up. He's a really cool guy.
And I've added his books to our list for our library. So
wonderful. Thank you.
Yeah, he's got some really cool talks on YouTube and stuff. Great photography in terms of what he, you know, shows to express what he's describing.
And if you look on the Sagamarine YouTube channel, you can find, we had him as a guest on last January. So you can find our webinar on there with him. And again, we're going to be having him for another community webinar, always free, on February 17th to kick off the garden season and to kick off our plant sale.
Well, that's fantastic. Well, please send that to me. We can make sure it gets sent out around campus. And I think we're at a good stopping point. So I'll just say once again, thank you, Catherine, for your time in this talk and also your time in general in advocating, you know, for these issues and having such a good impact in the Southwest suburbs. So thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone. And thank you for listening or watching this at a later date.